Hi, I'm Chelsea Handler. Welcome to Life Will Be the Death of Me, a production of iHeartRadio. You may know me from my shows, my TV shows, Chelsea on Netflix or Chelsea Lately or Chelsea Does series on Netflix or any of my books. I am doing a limited series podcast to go hand in hand with my sit-down comedy tour about my book called Life Will Be the Death of Me. I wrote a book about me seeing a psychiatrist for the first real time in my life and getting real about childhood trauma, loss, grief, all of the things that none of us ever really want to deal with. I dealt with them at 42 and still dealing with them now, but I have to say I feel a lot better, a lot more grounded, and a lot happier. So I just kind of want to take everybody through my journey of taking this book on the road, of talking to all the different people on the road who are going to interview me in different cities. Jake Tapper's in D.C. I have Connie Britton in Austin and Dallas. And I have Natasha Lyonne in New York. I have all sorts of fun people. And I also have my psychiatrist, Dan Siegel, who will be coming on to talk with me about me, my problems, and potentially you and yours, and how we can all kind of get better at being people. And my BFF, Mary McCormick, who you may recognize her from The West Wing or from In Plain Sight, a show she was on for many years, and most recently on The Kids Are All Right on ABC. She lives 10 minutes away from me and has had to deal with my behavior for the longest amount of time out of all of my friends. So I will be starting the podcast with her. She's my best friend, and she knows all the really embarrassing stuff that didn't make the book. Thank you for joining us today. It sounds so, I feel like a little bit... Oprah crossed with something else.
Crossed with Gail.
With Gail. And then here we are.
Yep.
And we're sitting here with Brandon, who is my... Brandon, how would you describe your position with me? It's a woman of the night?
Yeah. I tell people we're platonic life partners.
So we're basically, yes, you're my assistant and my decision maker.
And I love that you've decided to do your first podcast with your assistant.
Well, he knows the most about me.
I love it. I just love it because you admit that you don't do much without the help from an assistant. But this is sort of a new
level. Yeah, it was a real shock to me.
Level.
I found out about it.
I love it.
Yes.
I actually think it's going to be great because you're funny and smart and you do know Chelsea sort of as well as anyone. But I also think it's an incredible completion in your journey of
I've come full circle.
Of just admitting that you don't want to do anything without the help from many assistants.
Right. So it's basically like it's a 360 because I started out wanting to become more self-sufficient. And in that like year of therapy and self-exploration, I realized that it's just better for me to have an assistant.
It's overrated, all that independence.
Yes. It's best that Brandon is close to my side.
I would like him near me.
Yes. So I decided that, you know, independence is great if you've, you know, but why push it? Why push something when I'm not good at it? And I have so many other strengths that I want to focus on, right?
I think that's really smart.
So, Brandon, let me take you back because I know you have, how long have you been assisting me?
About 3 years, almost 3 years.
Okay. So that's not even that long. But before that, he worked on Chelsea Lately. Were you an intern
on
Chelsea
Lately? Yeah, I was an intern on Chelsea Lately.
I like when you ask him, was he?
Well, I mean, I'm just confirming the story that I've heard. So I don't know if you know how I met Mary originally.
On the show, no? On Chelsea Lately?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I interviewed on the show, and then we went to some women's event the next night. And we liked each other on the show because she was bad-mouthing her children and talking about how annoying they were. And I was like, I can respect that. And then we went to that, I forget what kind of event it was, but it was for women, about women and how to be stronger. And it was way before I had the luxury, I don't know how to frame it. It was a time where I didn't take the events like that as seriously as I should have. I kind of was like, oh, God, women talking about being powerful women. It's like, just go be a powerful woman. Why do you have to talk about it all the time? That was about 10 years ago. So then she asked me if I smoked, and I said, sure. And she goes, oh, let's go out and smoke a cigarette. And I was like, okay, great. We walked outside. I handed her a cigarette. She goes, oh, no, I quit. I can't do it, but please just blow the smoke into my face.
No, I said, blow it into my tits.
Why?
Because then it goes longer. I get more of it.
You're describing your tits as long right now?
No, I'm saying I get the smoke experience for a longer period of time. Meaning if you aim at my face, I always say aim at my boobs, but that is how we became friends. I wanted to inhale your secondhand smoke.
Cigarette, yes. Right. I think I made a comment about drinking and you were like, cheers to that. And we were both on the same page with like having a good time and not taking, you know, Hollywood too seriously.
So this was a relatively quick relationship.
Yeah, I think we made a dinner plan that week.
Anyway, so the relationship started from there. And I would like to introduce, in order to get a full landscape of our relationship, because our lives are very different. Mm-hmm. You're a mother of three. Mm-hmm. You're married. You know, you take your responsibilities seriously.
Well, yes.
Right. And Irish Catholic, you have a lot of, like, Catholic guilt. You want to do, you like to show up and work hard and hustle and be a good person.
Yeah, those, thank you.
Okay.
I mean, I think that's a compliment. I'm not sure. That didn't sound like one. Yes, those are true. That's true for the most part. I don't always do that, but that's my aim.
Brandon, would you agree with, have you noticed these things about Mary?
Yes,
and your
I've observed the same things.
Okay, great.
So confirmed.
I would say that these are all the things that I think of when I think of you.
Great. That's nice. I sound pretty together.
Yes. So I'm not together. I don't have a lot of I have responsibilities, but they're like man-made or, you know, it's debatable what kind of responsibilities I have. But I don't have children. And I like to get up and, you know, fly away and go on trips and impromptu vacations and stuff. So I have a different lifestyle than you
have. I think that's true.
Have.
But I do think, I mean, I think some people have kids and they don't have a lot of responsibility. So I don't think that just the having kids makes it. Meaning, I think you actually do have a lot of responsibilities, and you sort of do show up a lot to things. And I mean, you say you're going to be there, you're there. I mean, you get more done in one day than I do.
Well, I don't know if that's true, but I like to show up when I say I'm going to show up. We're both like that. We don't like to blow things off. We're not flaky.
No.
Neither one of us are like that.
No.
And in this town, that's good because you're although we should be more flaky, I would argue. If I just want to, like, you know, I think you know what I'm talking about.
I think I do.
And I think I have to learn a stronger lesson about not saying yes to people that are not necessary to hang out with. I do that more. Well, I would argue that you do it too, though.
I think I suffer from that more.
Yeah, it's people pleasing?
Yes, I suffer from that. My friend Shauna calls it the Mary McCormick disease because she thinks I will, like, I suffer from it and will never get over it.
This is what I call the Mary McCormick. If I ever see it again, I will call it that, but I haven't because almost nobody in the world does it. Is she was at a party, at a cocktail party, sitting on a stool, kind of like a bar stool, talking to two men confidently.
And for a long time.
Like very confidently. Legs like, you know, in jeans, but open, like splayed like a guy.
Like you do on a stool.
Like a guy does on a stool.
That's right.
Right. Well, we're guys, basically. I mean, I would say I'm more masculine than feminine. Excluding these two juggernauts.
Yes.
And do you want to finish the
story? I'll finish it. I don't know that there's that much relevance to the story. I don't know why.
Well, I just call it a Mary McCormick, and I want people to know what
I'm
saying.
Because I made a fool of myself. So I looked down. After a long time of chatting, I looked down, and I saw my vagina. I mean, my button on my jeans was still done, but the actual zipper was down. So there was just a triangle of vagina.
A vagina.
Pubic hair. And also just vagina fat, like a little, you know, the flesh on the vagina that can be a bit.
What I call the pincushion.
You know what I mean? So, and it was made more like pincushion-esque because the jeans was forcing it, you know.
To
poof out a bit.
Yes. Like you would do something if you wanted something to be poofy.
I don't wear underwear.
So your vagina was peacocking.
I don't wear a lot of underwear. That's correct.
Yeah. Peacocking. She doesn't wear a lot of underwear. She doesn't wear underwear.
I wore underwear yesterday.
Oh, why?
I don't know.
I think you get used to having a thong up your asshole if you do it long enough.
Right. That's like people who spin and they're like, oh, eventually you can't feel the pain in your vagina. Guess what? I don't want to lose that pain.
My other favorite Mary McCormick story is when she was driving to Pasadena and she carries a thermos with her long before it was cool. Or
was it cool? Well, I didn't know they got cool. I like a coffee thermos.
Yeah. And you were driving and you texted me a picture. It wasn't a picture of what happened, but can you take us through that story? I'm just doing this exposition because I want people to know the glue that keeps us together.
Is this the glue?
Perhaps.
Oh, wow. I didn't know it was that. I'm happy to share it.
I think
you think this is my most humiliating story. I don't think of it that way.
Right,
I think of it as completely resourceful. I'm proud of myself for how I handled it.
Right.
I mean, it's not ideal. I wouldn't want it to happen again. I was driving and I was in traffic, but really bad LA traffic where I couldn't go left and I couldn't go right. There was nowhere to turn. I mean, the cars in front of me and backwards. And all of a sudden I had to go to the bathroom and not number one. I had to shit.
A shadoobie is what I call it.
Yeah. But it was like my stomach, for it to happen that quickly, I was like, oh, this could be anything. I mean, I don't know what nature of Shadoobie was going to come out, because I just knew that something was about to happen, either in my clothes or I guess on the side of the road. I mean, I was in a full panic. I didn't know what to do. I couldn't go anywhere.
My hope for you would be the side of the road. But that would
You'd get arrested for that. I mean, you can't just get out of your car and squat.
But that's my hope for you. I would like to see
next time
that imagery.
Well, I think we already gave the story away by your lean-in. But luckily, I had my thermos. And I could see that if my car could sort of inch up even just two more feet, there's an alleyway I could get down. I couldn't turn down there's no real streets, but I could get down this alleyway. And so I managed to do that. Like I managed to sort of ride the curb a little and get down this alleyway. And then I pulled over and I thought, I have to shit. But if I get out and do it in the alleyway, there's windows, like businesses looking down onto the alleyway, I'm going to get in trouble. I'm going to get arrested or caught and I don't know how long it's going to take. I mean, I might be squatting, I don't know. And so I emptied my thermos out of the car. And luckily I have shopping bags in my car, paper, you know, grocery bags.
Because you're a mom.
Well, yeah, and because you should too. But anyway, and then, Brandon does, I'm sure.
Yeah, I do.
Right. So I put garbage bags on my seat, and then I took the thermos. I'm doing a turning motion with my hand because luckily it's a very thin Japanese thermos. And so the top is maybe like this, maybe an inch or inch and a half, 2 inches probably wide. And I put it up to my butt, but like tight, a tight fit.
Inside your butt?
Not quite in, but definitely in adjacent, like really close to in, so that there could be no accident. And then I pooped into my thermos.
Wow.
And then I screwed the top back on. I have wipes in my car as well because I'm a mom. I always have wipes. And so really the whole thing was as if it never happened.
This sounds like a very easy transaction.
I mean, I was the only hard part was getting in the position to get the thermos is about, you know, it's tall and thin. So getting up enough in my car to get the thermos under my bum. But I could do it. I did it, obviously. And then there was a dumpster. Threw the whole thing away. Thermos, bags, wipes.
See, I would,
as if it never happened. Felt great.
Yeah. I mean, it's almost like it's never happened. But I would feel like it would be hard to place that into the area. Like, I wouldn't feel confident. Like, this thermos right here, the Yeti with a big opening, then I would have confidence. Mm-hmm. That, I would think, I'm going to aim in the wrong.
There was no aim.
Oh, okay.
I'm not aiming.
Brandon, but that's tricky because you didn't know what sort of situation was going to come out of there.
I had a sense that it was not a full, big, solid action, just based on how fast
your bodily reaction.
Yes.
Okay.
I sensed that this might have a liquid quality to it. I feel proud of my resourcefulness and that my car has everything. My car has everything you need to survive.
Yeah, it does.
That's a mom's car.
Yeah, Brandon, you should have that in your car for me.
I know, not just my bag. I need it in my vehicle.
Yeah, I don't need snack bags. I need, like, you know, things that can save my life. I think the question is what do you do with the thermos? You know what I mean?
Of course you throw it away.
Well, I know, but I bet you there are some people that
do not. I did love that thermos. It's a Japanese thermos. It's a great one. But I threw it away. I have more. It's a weird start to this.
No, it's not.
I mean, I just wonder why you find it. And then I think, didn't I get a text from you this year saying you also pooped in your thermos?
No, I didn't poop. I peed in my thermos. I was visiting my uncle and I pulled over. I had to pee so badly. And I had to pull over on a very busy street, actually, and empty the thermos and then get into my car, put it. But the vagina, you know, like that I know how to do.
Also, was it this? Because that's not a real thermos. That's enormous.
This is a Yeti. Yeah. This is not hard to do.
It's
either.
Almost like a toilet. I mean, that's not really a challenge.
I don't know if I could get a smaller thing around my vagina either. I'm not sure.
No, peeing would be harder because the peeing gets a little.
But harder than the butthole?
Well, this, I aligned it quite, it was a snug alignment.
Yeah, we got that loud and clear all three times. She's taking a sip out of it now. Anyway, Mary and my friendship has lasted how long have we been friends? Since Rosie was a little girl.
Yeah.
Like probably 6 months after Rosie was born.
Yeah.
Which is probably one of my longest lasting relationships.
Actually longer. So yeah, she's 11. So almost
12. And Brandon, you haven't been here the whole relationship time, but Mary has. And so you've seen me go through a lot of different phases as I've seen you go through, well, less probably. I haven't seen you go through many phases
I would say, different work experiences. But I mean, like, you know, emotional or therapy phases.
You have,
know?
Though. I started going to therapy.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah, you went. Yeah, absolutely.
And started meditating.
That.
And, right. You know.
Yeah, you were the one who you started doing TM, and then you said it really helped you.
I love it.
And I, yeah, and I, do you still do it every day?
I do.
Yeah.
Although my second meditation is like right before bed.
And when you did that, like I remember we would be in the Bahamas and you guys were meditating, and you'd go over on a hammock and come back and say, oh my gosh, I fell asleep meditating. And I'm like, what the fuck is that? Like, how could you get so relaxed in the middle of the day? I had no understanding of it. I knew that people liked it. Brandon, do you meditate?
No, I try. I can't get into it. I can't stay relaxed long enough.
Right. Have you tried smoking pot and meditating? Kind of defeats the purpose, but it's a good gateway drug to get you there.
Yeah, and I did it for about 10 minutes that time, and I forgot what I was doing, so I don't know if it really worked out.
I think forgetting what you're doing is great, but I don't know.
I was just suddenly on the floor, and I'm like, what am I doing down here? I couldn't remember why I had braced myself.
So when I decided that, I didn't take your meditation, like, I didn't want to meditate myself. Like, I never had that desire.
No, you had a little disdain.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
A
little disdain, sure. Definitely, like,
I mean, you were happy. Like, I was happy, but I don't think you really.
Like, I didn't. Yeah, I didn't think I could. I thought it was good for a lot of people, but I wouldn't get anything out of it. But it's also you get this very judgmental feeling, at least for me, about people who went to therapy, because in this town, it's a lot of. I coupled that with colonics and cleanses and kale and you know.
Me
avocados.
Too. What I realized is you can go to therapy and still take a run.
Right.
Right. Like, it was no shame in just saying, I need some help.
Yeah. So now I'm meditating every morning. You're meditating. And Brandon, you're just masturbating before you go to bed.
No, he's getting
high
and finding himself on the floor, apparently.
Right. But tonight I'm going to go home and going to try meditating.
Well, yeah. You know, I mean, don't feel peer pressure. I mean, this is one of the, this is a conversation, A, that I never thought I would be sitting around having.
I copy that.
Yeah, right? I mean, talking about meditating and talking about
we've
self-help.
We've come a long way.
We have. I mean, we are almost in our 50s. You already are 50.
Well, we don't need to.
I'm 44, just for the record. I just want everyone to know what the deal is here, because sometimes Mary gets confused and groups us together.
It's true. But then it's always comforting when people come up and say, she looks older.
Yeah. I mean, people will always say that about me. And I think it's because I'm so mature.
Getting back into the friendship, kind of where it started, did you know right away that it wasn't going to be just a Hollywood friendship that was going to last, you know, a few like dinner dates and then taper off?
No, because you don't know that, you know?
No, but I mean, you do. Yeah, no. I mean, because in this town, you meet people all the time. And like sometimes, you know, a first impression is a great impression and then it's the wrong impression. And sometimes people are a slower burn. I mean, we were instant friends, but we were just like, you know, very similar. It could have gone either way.
That's true.
But this friendship seems different than friendships that you have with anyone else, like you two together. And why do you think that is? Like, what is it that Mary does for you that her relationship has endured when others haven't?
What's your opinion of our relationship before I answer questions? You've seen us, like, you've seen the dynamic of our relationship. And we've been friends for like 11 plus years and change.
I think Mary is kind of the way you describe what you want in a man. That I think that she...
Hey now. I love that.
I do. Like Mary is...
So funny.
Has like an authority to her. And I think she puts you in your place when you need it. I think like she tells you the truth, even if it's not going to benefit her. Like she's that honest friend that you have that you can go to and know you're going to get a real answer. So if she thinks... you know, what you're doing is garbage, but everyone else is telling you it's great, you know you can rely on that.
Yeah, I would say most of the time you tell me the truth. I think you try to spare my feelings sometimes, though. Like, I probably wouldn't know the best way to go about getting the truth, asking in a way that I think that would indicate that I don't care about the answer, maybe.
I think it depends on the issue. I mean, I think there have been times where big things have happened where I say that was... unacceptable.
Unacceptable. Like when I made our friend cry at dinner one night, we were at a restaurant in LA and we went out to dinner. There was four of us there.
Yeah, it was just completely unnecessary.
Yeah. I was really pissed at my friend and I just kind of went off on her and she just sat there crying and then I left.
A restaurant though where we knew tons of people. I was like, you could have just done that in a healthier way tomorrow. You know, so I mean, I think like, look, I do think we both sort of honor each other with the truth. I mean, there's been times where I've hurt your feelings and she says it, which I value. And, you know, I have very few friends who do that. I mean, I have a handful of friends who say, hey, you know, when you did that thing, it sort of sucks. It sort of actually hurts my feelings. And I value it, even though it's hard to hear in the moment. I do value it because it means at least your friendship is worth that, you know, that they're not lying to you and building up resentment. And so I think we do that pretty well. I mean, I think we've gotten pretty good at that over the years.
Well, okay. So looking back at that instance in the restaurant, would you like pre-therapy and post-therapy?
That was pre-therapy. In fact, I would say that was probably one of the, that time period was a pretty angry time period for you. Fair?
I'm trying to think what period of time in my life it was, but I'm sure you're right.
I think it was right before you decided to...
to leave E?
Yeah.
And I was, you know, done before it was over.
Yes.
And when you look back on that instance, do you think that there are things that you, like now the tools that you've learned in therapy that you would have been able to apply, or would you still have just been so
emotional?
Yeah,
I wouldn't do that now. No. I'm not emotional now, like in that way.
I think one of the things with therapy is you learn all these lessons, they give you all the tools, but then to actually apply them is a lot harder.
Then you go out and get into a fucking screaming match with a parking lot attendant after you've been meditating for 30 minutes.
I mean,
well, you're not going to be perfect. You know, I mean, it's not, I don't think meditation or any of that stuff or therapy makes you healed. It just makes you able to at least acknowledge what's going on.
Now, you're a big believer in therapy. And when she wanted to get into it, did you, like, what?
No,
what did you think?
I was thrilled, but you sort of snuck into it. Like, she was sort of like one of those people who gets sober but doesn't say, I'm sober now. They just are like, oh, I'm not drinking this month. And then it's 2 months and then it's 6 months. And I mean, I think you sort of approached your therapy the same way. Like,
because she said that she liked the way Dan explained things. And Dan Siegel, who's your, what would we call him? Your
He's
therapist?
He's my psychiatrist.
Psychiatrist. He is very scientific with the way he delivers information. But then months earlier, you'd gone to a hypnotist to quit smoking. So that's like a huge juxtaposition between I want
Sounds
scientific.
Sounds like somebody really did their research
for
this
interview.
No, I don't
think that is. I think that's scientific. I mean, hypnotherapy works.
I think it seems very L.A., like very wacky.
I think there's a ton of people in L.A. who probably are not actual hypnotherapists who you know, it won't work. But the data's in. I mean, lots of people are change their behavior based on hypnotherapy.
No, I'll say Carrie Gaynor, who was your hypnotist, we've sent other family members there to quit smoking, and they all stick with it. So whatever he's doing works. But to me, it seems like wacky that, like, I'm going to go to a hypnotist for this.
But it's
to
not
a very
like getting your stars
therapist.
Red.
No, exactly. Like, right. She didn't go, like, find out what her aura palette is.
Have that at home already.
Hypnotherapy
what is my
works?
Aura palette? Because I don't want to go through the rest of the day without
that. No, we do. She got it done on the Netflix show by Megan Fox. They did something with her aura. Do you remember?
Yeah.
I'll have to dig that out of the garage.
Please, let's rewatch that episode together when we get home today.
All right. Great.
Brandon, would you say, in your estimation, since this year I decided to put aside for myself and self-awareness and betterment, do you think that I've become better or less dependent on you?
Definitely. I think that you have become more independent, less dependent on me in a lot of ways. But for me, it was always like I would tell you, and I think sometimes I would tell you in times where you were already frustrated, so it was hard to hear. But there's a difference in wanting to do something and being able to do something. And for me, like when I'm gone, when I'm no longer your assistant, I want you to be able to do them. Like you should know how to do things.
No, you just got to line up another person. Let's be reasonable.
I know. Honestly, like you think after I'm done with, well, that's not a good way.
There are things that you can do.
We're doing a podcast.
I thought
you
said we were getting married.
This is my 2 weeks notice.
I thought you said you wanted to be married.
We are. We're going to be like Craig and Ellen.
So what are you talking about
long term?
When you move on? I thought you wanted to be my assistant forever.
When we get married and we find an assistant to support both of us.
Okay.
But that's what I think the difference is. And I think that you've been more willing to try and do things yourself, which is a lot of people won't do. So I think that's, you know, really positive.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
So do you think post-Chelsea you would be worried less? Like if that were true, if what she said
is
true.
Yeah, I'm worried less now, period. I mean, no.
Or post-therapy.
Yeah, for sure. Because there's a gentler reaction to everything. You know, she's...
What do you see it in the most, do you think? With the way she responds now.
I just think, I see it even in, I mean, she's always been inquisitive, like meeting people and stuff, but she also has if someone says something stupid or is just a little bit boring, she used to just be like, I could see her glaze over and then I'd be like, we should go because it's going to get, soon she'll just say to their face, like, are you serious with that story? Like she would really... And then we'd have like an awkward exit where I'm going, hey, it's okay. Like behind her, she's already in the car going, Mary, you know, in the car yelling at me because I'm inside doing the apology tour. So That I'm less on the apology tour.
That's what we should call my book tour, the apology tour.
Great idea.
I'm sorry, everyone.
That's what
I'm
this whole podcast should be called, the apology
it
tour.
It should be called With the Orange because of the orange theme of the book. Yeah. Aren't you glad I went to therapy?
That would have been good. That would have been good.
Well, not bad. But I am really glad she went to therapy because I did do a lot of, in fairness to her, she didn't ask me to do it. And maybe that's my own codependent craziness wanting to be like disease. I don't know. But I did often do like a cleanup before I would then get in the car.
Do you think that there's a way that you have responded best to therapy that you're like, okay, now I can deal with annoying people more or?
Yeah, I mean, that's been.
She's much more patient. You're kinder. I mean, I have to say, I think it comes from an increased empathy level, I'm sure, which you can call it whatever you want, but it's a kinder person. It's a more patient person, right? So if someone is bombing on a story or a joke or not that you were mean, you just had a cutoff switch. Like you would get annoyed real quick and then not be able to hide it.
Right.
And now she has a much more, you laugh at jokes that are like, you're just, it's a sweeter.
Well, I am stoned a lot.
Yes. And that helps.
Yeah.
I mean, I actually think that whatever that chemistry is, probably should be working for a ton of people. You know,
you don't use cannabis, right, Mary?
No, because I lose my mind. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not fun for me. It's just scary.
She can't smoke pot. No. She can't.
I really think I'm dying. I think, like, it's not.
I think that's just not the right mix then. Like, well, I think there's something you should be able to try.
She's fine the way she is. She doesn't need it. I needed it to cut my reaction time. You know what I mean?
Slow you down.
Or add reaction time.
I do think it adds. I mean, I do think it's a love drug. It's a nice, people on pot aren't beating each other up. They're kinder to each other. So I think in that respect, I'm all for it.
Okay. So, I have an idea. Let's talk about where we started when I started writing this book, where we started after the election to where we are now.
Okay.
Let's talk about that. And Brandon, feel free to chime in. Do you want to start?
Well, I mean, we could start by just saying that we had different expectations of the election.
Yeah. Okay.
I was sure Trump was going to win.
And I was sure that he was not.
Right. And you watched at my house.
Yes.
With all my girls, and we had champagne on, because I was hoping I was wrong.
Champagne and tears.
We had, before the tears, we were all, it was a long night, and we had a lot of women, I think my sister had flown in.
Yeah, Bridget was there.
And maybe my mom, no, not my mom. But anyway, there was a bunch of women and three little girls who had campaigned for her and stuff. So it was a pretty painful night, I mean, for everybody, but in our house, particularly painful, because then I had to try to explain to them that we just elected a known sexual assaulter and how to make sense of that. You know, it was awful that night, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was really bleak. It was
dark.
And
then for days after, I think there was a real shock and a lot of crying. And then I think something happened with you, which was really great.
I'm going to take a hit off my vape pen.
Oh, that's great. But I do think what was great about that time is that you, I mean, instead of just, at first we had like a little mourning period, and then I think you just saw it as a chance to be part of the solution and not comment on it from the sidelines. Like your show had been for years that it's commentary, right? It's like your point of view about things that are happening. And for the first time, I think you sort of were like, maybe I can be part of the thing that's actually happening, the solution. And when you started going to colleges, I think, and talking to young people and—
Yeah, that was—
I think that was really meaningful for you, well, that college time.
It was meaningful for me, I think, also because I had to figure out a way to talk to conservatives without screaming, which was my only way to communicate for so long. So I had to figure out how to have discourse that was effective instead of just being at a 10 and outraged because I realized you're not getting anybody to listen to you in that way.
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
why I think it linked nicely with the therapy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the timing was appropriate.
Yes.
Yeah. Because that was my initial thing to go into therapy was how do I learn to not be so, you know, not to be so loud about my anger and my outrage.
Yeah. And I think that part of that was Trump. And also at the time— I remember before therapy, you had expressed to me, like, am I just hated? Am I, you know, like you had had arguments with more than one, a few people, right? And you had had sort of like, or not arguments, but you were just like, oh, I felt that person do this. Or
yeah.
You were really concerned about
my image.
Yeah. I remember we had that one conversation in my driveway sitting in a car. And I had said, there is something about the fact that none of the people I knew who you were your friends when we met, that you don't speak to any of them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something to look at.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I was still there and others as well, but there was a bunch of people who had,
right,
who were just gone.
Okay. How do you think I'll die, Mary?
I don't think you'll ever die.
Okay. You want to be kept alive. You want to be frozen.
I don't want to. Yeah. So I'm one of those people that.
So Brandon, you know, write this down for both of us because this is important information for you to know. She wants to be kept alive no matter what.
Yeah. You want to be no matter. Oh, wait. Are you saying?
When they tell you I'm brain dead, I don't want you to unplug.
Okay.
She wouldn't want to live like this. Yes, she would.
Okay.
You know when people say that? I want to live like that.
So let's say after the fact, say that the plug has been pulled.
Do you not want to get pulled.
Do you want your brain kept?
Everything.
Yeah, yes. Everything kept.
But don't even pull the plug. She'd rather be a vegetable for
bed sores for the rest of my life. Like, flip me, sponge me down. I don't care.
And for what reason? Are you just like, if the chance ever
is? Yeah, science is moving so fast. Don't unplug me. Never unplug me. Michael can get remarried. You can get a new best friend. You can forget about me. Don't visit. I don't care. But don't unplug me.
Okay.
And then she's hoping that stem cell research or whatever will come around time to resurrect her body. And when that happens, she's ready to rumble.
Yes. And you're the exact opposite.
I want to be put down if I get diagnosed
You'd
with
like
any
fatal. You'd like to be put down now.
Yeah, I'm tired. And I would be totally fine if I died tomorrow. So it would be a joyous, wonderful experience. I would be excited to get onto the next
phase. I am excited
phase.
About the sleep in death, that seems.
What would you like us to do with your body, Brandon? Do you have any specific instructions?
Stuff me and just put me in a chair at your house.
Oh, you just want to
sit there?
Yeah,
I just want to be with you indefinitely.
Uh-huh. That sounds very, very gay. Mary, what's the worst thing that you've seen me do? I'm trying to think of the worst thing I've seen you do. I'm thinking that thermos shitting story is pretty much the worst, but
I'm so proud of that.
You think of that as a liberation.
I think of it as resourcefulness. Yeah, as like, God damn it, like I can get out of any
scrape. Maybe I'm associating too much shame with taking a shit in your car, and I think—
I'm not proud of that part, but I mean, I would rather that not happen. It was uncomfortable, but it was—
Like
yeah,
you could have
shit your
pants.
I nailed it.
Right.
I mean, I could have gone to a meeting afterwards. It went so well. So I don't find that— I don't know, the worst thing you've ever done?
I would say my most humiliating experience. I have a humiliating experience that
okay,
she
so
was
that's
at.
That's different than worst. But talk to me about that.
We were at that Kevin Huvane's CAA party, and I was in a blackout.
But it was because you were on a crazy diet.
Well,
right?
I've been in plenty of blackouts that I don't have a diet to blame. But
yes, this one was.
I was on that.
Because I haven't seen you drunk like that. Like, I've never, you always walk out of parties. Like, even if you yell at people on the way out,
right,
and I'm behind you apologizing, you do walk out. This was like, I've never seen anything like it. And it was because you were on that HCG diet.
Yeah.
So just on a really, really low calories, almost no eating, plus a shot.
Yeah, I was doing that shot into my thigh, like a pregnancy HCG
hormone, whatever. Anyway,
hormone.
That combined with, it was only,
the
we
first
were
time
only
I was
there
pregnant.
Like an hour. Oh, and you were so, you couldn't see straight. You didn't know where you were. We carried you out.
Well, no, I think Jeremy Renner and Chris Evans
and Sandy Bullock and I carried you out.
Came and got you guys, and they're like, Chelsea's outside. I guess I was leaning against her. It was really bad. I don't remember. I remember waking up at 5 o'clock in the morning in my bunk beds and calling. I was like, not even in my big girl room. And I called Mary. I'm like, what the fuck? And
big
you're like,
girl.
Oh, sweetie, that was bad.
It was.
You're like, do you remember
and
anything?
So public, like bright lights. And just every agent, every person in the industry is the CAA Oscar party, I think.
Yeah,
oh,
but you know
what?
There is a feeling about like that having it happen there versus like a family affair I prefer because everyone in Hollywood, like not everybody, but there's enough people that make asses out of themselves that there's a new story every week. Like I would be more humiliated if that happened at like, you know, my dad's funeral because then that would mean I'm like off the rails or something like for some reason, the context of it's not good. So anyway, let's pass
How long ago was that?
It's Tuesday.
No, I would say about three or four years ago?
It was longer than that.
Really?
Yeah, that was like 5 years ago, probably.
Huh.
She once caught me stealing candy at one of her daughter's swim meets, but that wasn't
bad.
But you
were stealing it
for
them.
That was for them.
Yeah, that was sweet. That's not bad. No, I don't know. I'm trying to think of like an actual event.
Well, we don't have to.
Do you have a memory that comes to mind when you're asking her? Like, do you?
Yeah.
Do you have something where you're like, oh, this is the worst thing I've done or done to
somebody?
That
party was what I just thought of. I mean, in terms of character, like doing something bad, I don't know. Like, my bad is impulse. Like, when I think about something, I wouldn't. You know what I mean? So, like, anything I've done has always been like, I don't know.
When you think of yourself doing something bad, do you think of it in terms of like to yourself or like something that you've done that didn't affect
that's
anyone?
That's bad to someone else. That's like bad behavior, not like mean-spirited behavior.
Would you have known that before?
Where are your hands, Brandon? Keep them where I can see them, please.
Would you have been able to recall that before therapy or only now that you're trying to work on the empathy part? Not just like, oh, I feel bad for this person, but like really how that person must have felt?
Yeah, remember how you said that thing to that girl at that party? She had on a pink dress.
No, what?
And you said something like, oh, that's like I like your dress. And I was like, oh, right away I get nervous because I knew you don't like it. So right away my blood runs cold. Like I know the rest is coming. And she was like, oh, thanks. And she knew each other when you were young or whatever. And then you said something like, yeah, it's like summer horror or something. And then just walked away. And I know her. So I was left like, and she went, God, that's so mean, huh? And I was like, she's just trying to be funny. It's just her being funny. You know, she just likes to make a joke and walk away. And she just was like,
Oh, that's so mean. That's mean.
You don't do that
is
now.
Is it, though?
Yes.
You know what's sad, though? Because I know it is. But, like, I laugh at it. People listening to this are going to laugh at that because it's like we know that brand of humor associated with her. Whereas, like, when we really think about it and know what type of person she is, like, that's not nice.
Well, to the person, it's not
right.
Nice. Meaning, if she says it to me, I love all that about her, too. It's like, that's the fun stuff.
Right.
Right. I mean, her point of view, her angry point of view, that's why we sign up for her.
Every day I come
but
into
I think
work just
you
hoping
rarely
for it.
Do it to there's been some you wouldn't do that now ever.
No, I would
not
only
to the person's face.
No, and if I did it would be somebody who knew me
right.
That I was friends with. I wouldn't do it like I don't any longer expect people to understand my personality.
Well, you're both
or
very
that everything's a joke. Like that's not their problem, that's my problem.
Well, okay, so, but you're both very funny and you kind of have the same sense of humor.
Yeah. We have a mean sense of humor. We try not to be.
Do you try to keep each other like checked in that though? Because Mary, you are kind of vocal or like you have looks for each other that you're like no, like
yeah.
Copy
but I mean,
that.
I think I have a mean sense of humor, but I'm not mean to people.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because there is a line. I think that
now I just keep I try and keep more thoughts to myself.
do you both think that's better that people have been more thoughtful that way? Because like. I've talked to people and I think it's they've gone too far one way. And now nothing's funny anymore. You can't joke about anything. Like I think I was talking to Chelsea about Family Guy's not doing any gay jokes anymore, which I think are some of the funniest ones on the show. It's been around for I think like 17 seasons and they're just taking them out completely.
I don't know. It's a hard debate.
I think that like it's good for us to challenge ourselves to get yeah. humor in different ways.
It's interesting to hear you say that, though, as a gay man, because I always, whenever I hear white men, the only ones really complaining about things not being funny anymore are white guys.
Right.
In my experience. So it's interesting to hear you say that because while you're a white guy, you're a gay white guy. But mostly I only hear straight white guys going like, yeah, it's just nothing's funny anymore. It's like, yeah, you know what? You'll figure it out. We're still laughing.
Right.
Like we're all still laughing. You know, people of color are still finding things funny. It's so I don't know. But that's why that's interesting to hear your point of view on that. But I think there's still a lot to laugh at without, you know.
Poking fun at someone.
Yeah.
Like,
I don't
know.
It's a fine line.
I think it's all and it's all kind of interrelated with, you know, I think, for instance, Brendan, I'm curious to see, were you as surprised, like the Me Too movement and all of the people that, I know Mary probably wasn't as surprised as I was about how rampant it was, because Mary's been like singing that song for a while, that it's a man's world and like women are not respected. And I'm always like living in this like butterfly rarefied existence where just everything was going great for me. So I assumed that not to be the case because I was looking at my own experience rather than other people's. But as a gay man, were you as surprised to hear how rampant this kind of abuse of power and sexual abuse was?
Not at all.
Not at all.
No, but to me, like, I'm from the Midwest, you see it from the outside, and it's all very sparkly and exciting. And I think a lot of those stories are these people coming here, again, with that kind of allure of like, oh my God, this is what the opportunities are going to be if I do this thing. But I still think that there's a sense for anyone, and I'm sure people will not like this, but it's like if you're going to a hotel room for a meeting, like, but we're thoughtful about this with you, like you don't take meetings in your hotel room. Whereas I always thought like you would know right or wrong, like you would know, like don't take this meeting in the hotel room.
Right.
But some people really, I think, just come into it thinking like this person is looking out for me. They have my best interests at heart. Like, why should this be weird? I'm not going to make it weird. And now you have all these women. So I think that's what was more surprising was that the context that we're finding out these things happened or that like, I really did not expect this. And I think other people have said, like, you kind of know what you're going to get if you do those things. But I think I knew that there were things going on, but maybe not in the way they were happening.
Did you ever get sexually assaulted by somebody at work, Mary? Or did you feel sexually uncomfortable? Yes.
Oh, yeah. And I've also, yes. I've been Me Too'd.
Really?
Yeah, for sure. I had a guy, yes, yeah.
And you would also argue that I have too and just don't recall it, right?
Yeah, or laughed it off or, you know,
yeah,
whatever.
Been drunk
but I have this interesting relationship to this too, because on the one hand, I feel like most women my age spent decades, you know, trying to keep their job and not fuck the guy, right? Like that's how we, or laugh at enough jokes that he feels flattered, but not just that one that you don't want to laugh at too many because then he's going to want to see you naked, right? So it's that fine line. Women my age spent, and I think young women are not suffering from that now, which is fantastic. I have three daughters, so I want all this change. I do have a little bit of like an irrational part of my brain sometimes that goes like, God, they're complaining about that? Like, which is so messed up because I want all the complaining is good and all this change is, oh my God, long overdue and for the best. But I do have this weird, it's like people who've been through it, women my age must be like, oh, fuck, we did that. Like we managed, I found a way out of that room or that situation or that, but I shouldn't have to find a way out of that hotel room. I shouldn't have to find a way to try to keep my job and not fuck that guy. Or, you know, I shouldn't have to not get the job because I didn't fuck that guy. Right. Mm-hmm. So, I think through all of this, and even though there's painful moments and sometimes we're going to overcorrect and go too far and, you know, it feels like we're losing the ability to make jokes or whatever. I think through all of this, I'll have three daughters who can actually have a meeting in a hotel room.
Right.
They should be able to have a meeting in a hotel room, I would argue.
And not worry.
And not fucking worry. Right. Men should fucking be able to have a hotel room meeting as well and not assault and not just take everything all the time.
Yeah, it sounds like there's going to be a whole new generation of men who really are fucking walking on eggshells.
Yeah, well, for right now, they're really pissed off. I mean, I think men are really confused. I hear it all the time. White men are going, oh, God, you can't say anything anymore. Yes, you can. There's a lot you can say. You just can't. It feels like the end of a party for them because it is the end of a party for them. That's why it feels sad. They're sad. They're going to mourn this world they lived in because it was a world where they got to eat whatever they want, take whatever they want, fuck whatever they want. They wear sandals.
Right.
I mean, they show their feet and they sit on subway cars with their legs spread open. Take up three seats, you fat fuck. That party's done. Women have had it. It's over. And so, yeah, I understand why they're pissed.
Well, it's like you say in your book, you can either get on board or you're going to miss the train. Like,
right. And so they're going to be angry and it doesn't matter. Young women don't care. I did this movie recently with a bunch of young women and I was the only woman my age. And we were driving in a van from base camp to set. And the transpo guy, the guy driving the van, we were in sort of stop and go traffic. But the transpo driver, and I've never seen this, they're usually really, really professional, but he was showing pictures on his phone to the guy in the passenger seat. And I was in the back row of the van, like looking at it like, oh, God, oh, my God, what the fuck? Why is he doing that? And this young actress in front of me just like was in the middle of a conversation with another young actress. And she literally just went like this. Hey, pal, get off your phone. What are you doing? And then she just went back to talking to her friend. And I was like instantly through my body, I felt relief that she'd said it and shame that she'd said it. Like I was like wanting to apologize to that guy because I felt like he'd be embarrassed because it was a big van full of people. And I thought, this is so interesting. She felt, not only did she not feel embarrassed, she felt completely happy speaking up for her safety and then went right back into her conversation. She didn't, like, had I done the exact same thing, had I found the courage to do it, which is so stupid, I would have said this. Hey, I'm so sorry. I was in an accident a few years ago, and so I'm a little bit crazy about, like, traffic and safety.
And phones.
See, if it's not too much trouble, do you mind putting away your phone? I'm so sorry.
Yeah, but isn't that
that's how I would have done that.
Isn't that what we're trying to get away from, like a woman feeling they need to apologize?
Right, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
No, that's exactly my point. My point is hats off to that girl in front of me. That's generational. And so I hope my daughters never feel that way about speaking up for their own safety. And I hope they live in a world where they don't have to laugh at bad jokes just to make some guy feel
validated.
You know, yeah, like you want to fuck him if only you didn't have a boyfriend. You know how many times I've said that? That party's over.
It is amazing what men think that they can do and get away with no regard.
Because we have a guy in the White House who brags about sexual assault and is the leader of the free world.
You know,
so
nice
why shouldn't they think that?
I think, like, as a man, is the type of men who come out in support of women and, like, or take responsibility for, like, oh, yeah, I've definitely done, like, gross dude things. Like, I think maybe Ben Affleck was one when he slapped that woman's ass at a party and came out and was like, I'm so sorry for, like, the way I behaved, but, like, I'm growing. Like, I'm working on it as a person. And I think we criticize them still because it's like you should know better. But these men who have really come out in support
of women
someone
in
and
process.
For women,
I like that.
And that they're like, you know what, I made mistakes. Like, I'm really not proud of that.
Yeah, we can't change overnight. I think that's great. I mean, I have a friend who mansplained me so hardcore recently. Like, I said something about a politician or something, and then he literally said it back to me. Didn't even really – sometimes mansplainers will change a word or two to make it sound like it's their idea. But he obviously just liked the idea and then repeated it back word for word. And I was like, I have to say something. I was like, I can't – you can't just repeat back the thing I just said to you without even dressing it up as like your idea. Like you just completely mansplained me in the most aggressive way. I can't – and I have to tell you as a friend that that's what you did. And his he went, I don't mansplain. Like, and I went, And then he went, I didn't mean to. And I thought, all right, that we can work with. I mean, listen, I didn't even know that term before. I just knew I lived in a world where men always taught me things I already knew. But now we know that word and we can identify it. And it's going to be uncomfortable for a little while, right? That I think that's a growth moment. And that made me love that guy.
Well, I think that there's a lot of, you have that, especially in entertainment from what I've seen, is that people don't know what they're doing can seem condescending or rude, because I think some people are just trying to be friendly or give you the information. What this guy was doing was obvious.
Or it's a habit that's been created over time, and they don't know the difference because it's like a fish in water. They don't know that they're doing it.
But like this guy taking the couple of seconds to reflect on what he had done and being like,
I didn't mean to. Yeah, it's a nice, it's like.
It's those little, you know, growth.
I mean,
it's
I knew him well, so I felt comfortable saying it, but you know.
But you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, but I think it's so good that you said it.
Yeah, it's big for me because I'll tell you that van story. When I got off the van, that young woman just went into set and did her lines and was thinking about her work. And I got off the van and did 10 minutes with the driver like, hey, not a big deal. I think, you know, some people. Anyway, I mean, literally undermined everything she did. I hated myself for it. I'm telling that may be my most embarrassing. I'm proud of the pooping in the thermos. This I'm not proud of.
Would you do that if it were a woman driver?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So maybe it's not as sex related as you're just worried about people's feelings.
Yes, but it's generational. The issue is not about him. Well, although maybe I was more sensitive because he was a man. I think I was. Meaning,
yeah, I would
I watched a man be dressed down by a young woman. And for me, as a 50-year-old woman and how I was raised in the world I was raised in, I was like, oh, God, he's going to feel super emasculated. That's not safe. I don't like when men feel emasculated. Let me make this better.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of just, how about he doesn't fucking get on his phone?
Yeah, when he's driving a group of people.
Right, right. I know that to be true in my conscious head.
No, I know. It's interesting that you were able to pick up that you did that, like, and reflect on it so quickly after the.
I think about that van ride a lot.
Well, yeah, I guess.
Because I also have three daughters, so I think, like, I want them to live in a world. I bump into furniture and apologize. I mean, women have a lot of. We have a hard time taking up space and demanding what's ours. But I see younger women not having as much trouble with that, and it's a real positive change.
Okay, well, this sounds like a good time to take a break. Okay, Brandon, I see you whipped up some questions here, so we'll try and just entertain you with them.
Oh, you wrote these?
No, I don't know where these came from, but I'm
probably Mabel, the cleaning lady, for all we fucking know. What do you think my cause of death will be? This is for both of you.
Old age.
Yeah, agreed.
If I didn't have assistants, managers, cleaning ladies, or any staff at all, how long do you think I would survive?
Not long. Not long. You can't do a podcast without an assistant. I mean, for fuck's sake.
Brandon,
what is that stupid book you gave me recently?
Essentialism.
Yeah, fuck you. I was like, literally, here it is. Do you know what essentialism is? The gist of the book? Like, do less. Yeah, I'd love to do less. You fucking asshole.
You have to.
No, I need my bell. You give me my bell, Brandon. Tanner. Who's your house guy now? You give me those guys, and then I'll read Essentialism.
Willie. So suck on that.
Essentialism.
Essentialism is good.
I would love to do less.
You're being closed-minded. You can do less better.
You just know your audience
just
when you give them a book.
Just know that you do too much. You don't have to do everything you do. You don't have to.
Okay. But for you to say that, you're crazy. I have three lives who depend on me to do everything I do.
I have 15 people who depend on me, too. They're not my children, but they depend on me.
Okay, let's move on.
Yeah, let's. I mean, no one takes me seriously. Bernice, are you listening to this? She doesn't even know I'm her mother. Okay, what is something you've seen me do that you would categorize as not normal?
Hmm.
Brandon?
I mean, I mean, I appreciate this about you, but like diagnosing other people and then giving them pills.
Oh yeah, no, antibiotics.
Yeah, but I
probably love a Z-Pack, which you're not supposed to do.
She will give anyone, but be careful everybody in here, because you will be on a Z-Pack before the day is out.
But I also give you medication that you need, you know, when you go on a trip and you need Xanax, yeah. I supply that, or Sonata, yeah. or whatever else, you know, I'm always, I love
to
share.
You're like a pharmacy.
Yeah, I know what people need. What kind of guy would you want me to settle down with?
I mean, Brandon thinks it's me.
Basically.
So a male version of Mary.
I think someone who reads a lot, someone who skis really well, someone who I think most of all has to be really inquisitive. Like I think your ideal partner would be some, don't say partner, but your ideal person would be someone that you could like travel all over the world and just get into trouble, like go on adventures with. Someone really inquisitive.
I think that's right. Brandon, wouldn't you second that emotion?
And, yeah, non-industry. They have like a job separate of entertainment.
Yeah, skier. Skier.
Probably does not live in the same city as you.
Yeah,
I don't
know.
I hope that's not.
Well, he can visit LA.
I think ultimately you're going to be
someone. That makes sense.
It would be hopefully someone who gets like who really just loves you for you, you know?
Right.
That you don't have to change for. I think that's the key.
No, I don't think so. I don't think I can change. I just already changed so much. Where would I? I'd have to go back to the other person.
Right.
How many more versions of me can there be?
No, this is it. I want to settle into this one because she's nicer and I do less apologizing.
So the reason why I wanted to do this, Mary, thank you for accommodating my wishes.
Happy to be here. This book is as funny as all your other books and then has all this other, it breaks your heart as well. I mean, it's really, I mean, I've talked to so many people who are like in tears reading it. And then feel sort of healed after, you know?
I know. It's amazing that people would have that reaction.
Because I think a lot of people have similar experiences. You know, we sort of think we bury something really sad or we bury our weakness and our sadness and our vulnerability and we turn it into anger, right? And and I think everyone can relate to that. So there's something really cathartic for people when they read it. But it is also really, really funny. So I think it's that you're calling it a sit-down tour is one of my favorite things.
And also, luckily, I read that book that you so aptly described, Essentialism, which explained to me to do less better, which is a book about saying no to more things and doing fewer things. And my lesson in this book and writing this book was that this is the one thing. I mean, I know I did a documentary. I was like campaigning, Brandon, whatever you were talking about. I'm sorry if we're boring you right now.
I know.
He's on Tinder. This is the first time I'm able to focus on a book tour, to go on a tour and to be present. That's my new thing, is to be present with every engagement with every person all day long and not be distracted by bullshit or you know, and so I'm going to do that tour in that vein and like really try and enjoy every moment instead of being angry at my success.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Anyway, this has been an emotional morning, you guys. I want to thank you all for being here.
It was fun.
All two of you.
Yeah. And now the world knows my secrets.
And you're going to be interviewing me in Phoenix, Arizona.
Yes.
Yes, which is May 31st. Mary will be interviewing me in Phoenix, and you can get tickets to that at chelseahandler.com or livenation.com. That's going to happen. And then we'll continue. And then, Mary, you'll just have to pop in whenever we need to do a podcast.
I'll just poop in some more thermoses so I have more to talk about.
Yes, please bring your thermos next time. Thank you. Life Will Be the Death of Me is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.